Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we're going to open our show with two stories about world events that are having a big impact right here in San Diego County. Rescue Task Force, a well-known group that started in East County, will be heading to Iraq and Kurdistan, bringing help to persecuted Christians there. And in City Heights, local Somalis are reacting to news that a leader of the Al-Shabaab terrorist group in Somalia has been killed by a U.S. airstrike. After that, we'll tell you about a California Public Utilities Commission hearing on proposed changes in your utility rates that will be held right here in El Cajon, where you'll have a chance to weigh in with your opinion. And we'll have news about an upcoming climate change march in San Diego and in cities around the world. Our newsmaker interview today is with Lane Sharman from the San Diego Energy Foundation. He'll be sharing news about a major victory in Sacramento and how a small band of environmentalists defeated the Goliath utility industry to kill what they call the Monopoly Protection Bill. From the County News Service, we'll have updates on some new tools to battle wildfires and what you should do to prepare for what could be the worst fire season in memory. Plus, hear about a fire raging out of control that's forced evacuations in Yosemite National Park. We've got a rundown on local ballot measures across our region. Details of a bill to regulate drones that's now on the governor's desk. Information on why some roads in Cleveland National Forest have been closed to the public lately. And results of a California poll on how we should treat the immigrant children coming across our borders. We also have a disturbing story about smugglers who abandoned a pregnant woman in the Otay Mountains, plus a warning from San Diego State Police about a sexual assault on campus and a suspect who is still at large. We'll tell you about a 911 memorial planned here in East County. There's a deadline looming for local farmers to apply for the California Conservation Lands Program, and we'll tell you about that. Meanwhile, Helix Water District has voted to extend a deadline for making Lake Jennings profitable and keep the campground open for the time being. Stay tuned to find out why. We'll have all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Rescue Task Force, an international aid group that started here in East County, is sending a multinational team of disaster responders to help Christian refugees displaced in Kurdistan and Erbil by the ISIS or Islamic State terrorists. The Rescue Task Force volunteers will bring medical and dental help along with humanitarian supplies. They'll meet up in California with leaders Gary Bex and Larry Cuttings and then travel to Erbil and trek to northern Kurdistan. To date, 1.2 million people have survived the initial slaughter by ISIS forces and have fled to safe havens in Erbil and Kurdistan, faced with a stark choice of fleeing their homes, converting to Islam, or being beheaded. Most fled with only the clothes on their backs. Bex and his team have been to the scene of major disasters around the world, from earthquakes to tsunamis, but, he told East County Magazine, in our 26 years of responding to disasters of every sort, we have never been called upon for such a task and opportunity to serve such as this. Beck said that escorts and security are in place and local Christian leaders will meet the team to get them to the areas in most need. The team's dentist will bring a mobile dental drill and extraction tools, purchasing other supplies and anesthetics locally. Imagine having an abscessed tooth while fleeing for your life, says Beck. Local volunteers will connect the team with local doctors who are overwhelmed by the massive humanitarian crisis. Tens of thousands of people are packed into churches and public parks in Erbil, where the weather is over 100 degrees, though winter will come soon, bringing new challenges. The team hopes to use donations to buy pharmaceuticals, over-the-counter medications, and relief supplies for makeshift clinics set up in the refugee compounds. They'll be setting up distribution routes for overseas shipping containers of relief supplies and medicines that will follow from Rescue Task Force and World Emergency Relief. The cargo and supplies are donated, but the freight bill must be paid. Bex told East County Magazine that $12,000 can deliver $6 million worth of life-saving medicine. He asked for prayers for his team of rescue workers, as well as for the persecuted Iraqi Christians. If you would like more information or want to know how to make a donation, you can visit www.rescuetaskforce.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, will hold two public hearings on proposed utility rate changes on September 18th in El Cajon at the City Council Chambers. The meetings will be held at 2 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. This is your opportunity to let state regulators know how proposed rate changes will impact you. San Diegans currently pay amongst the highest utility rates in the nation, and they may soon get even higher. Restrictions on residential rate design were lifted after enactment of Assembly Bill 327 in October of last year, so utilities can now propose residential rates that reflect their costs. The CPUC is evaluating a residential electric rate design change proposal that could include baseline percentage changes and time of use rates. The CPUC will also have advisors available to explain programs available to reduce your costs, how to read your utility bill, and how to participate in the CPUC proceedings. Eric Lund, general manager of the East County Chamber of Commerce, says that the current four-tiered system has created severe rate unfairness, especially for the East County region's residential and business taxpayers. He says, if you are paying for electricity in the Tier 2 or 3 category like most homes in the East County, your rates are substantially higher, primarily because you are subsidizing ratepayers who live along the coastal region and who don't need air conditioning. Chamber leaders met recently with SDG&E regarding rates that the chamber believes are unfair for most taxpayers in hotter inland regions. The Chamber wants to see a simpler two-tiered model that's been proposed. The two-tier model would reduce rates for people currently in Tier 2 and 3, while slightly increasing rates for those in Tier 1 and 2. Lund says that you can learn more about this at fixmyenergybill.com. That site blames rate hikes on clean energy mandates, new taxes, and inflation that contends that over a third of people earning less than $60,000 a year are paying more than their fair share. Turn to URN, the Utility Consumers Action Network, warns that a new CPUC proposal would charge customers a premium during the hottest times of the day, making it hard for consumers to beat the sweltering heat. Turn's website states, unless we stop it, the CPUC will instruct utilities to impose punishment pricing, drastically raising prices for daytime electric use on hot days, regardless of how much you use. Lane Sharman at the San Diego Energy Foundation, which aims to form a consumer choice option for purchasing clean energy, says the situation is complex and notes that rate structures have sometimes imposed obstacles for homeowners seeking to install solar. On September 18th, you can let the California Public Utilities Commission know your views on utility rates in the public hearing at 2 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. in El Cajon City Hall. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
The Pentagon confirms that a U.S. airstrike has killed the co-founder of Al-Shabaab, an Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorist group based in Somalia. Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby says removing Ahmed Ghodain from the battlefield is a major symbolic and operational loss to Al-Shabaab, since the U.S. works with its allies to curb regional and global threats posed by violent extremist groups. Al-Shabaab was behind the bombing of a shopping mall in Kenya and has also spread its violence into Uganda. In San Diego's City Heights neighborhood, which has a thriving population of Somali immigrants, local Somalis hailed the announcement as great news. Muhammad Ahmed built a school in Somalia with a group called Cure Africa. He now lives in City Heights, but hopes to return to his homeland someday. He told KPBS that news of the Al-Shabaab leader's death brought relief to local immigrants with family in Somalia, and also to Somalis here who are worried about terrorists recruiting their children in America. Muhammad Ahmed works with young people and says he is not aware of any current recruitment efforts by Al-Shabaab in San Diego, but The terrorist group's recruitment of 23 Minnesota teenagers has worried some parents here. And back in 2013, four Somalis from San Diego were convicted of conspiring to provide support to al-Shabaab, including an imam at a local mosque. Mohammed Ahmed believes the community must engage young Somali men in positive pursuits to help them lead productive lives here in America and be less vulnerable to overseas extremist groups recruiting young fighters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with a Green Scene Report. People around the world will be holding a climate march on September 21st to call on world leaders meeting at the United Nations Climate Summit to take action now on climate change. Organizers hope to make it the largest climate march in history. Here in San Diego, a People's Climate Change March will be held to support the global events and focus on climate change solutions that can be implemented locally. The marchers will be calling for a rapid transition from fossil fuels to renewables and energy efficiency, as well as a just and sustainable economy. Locally, the march will begin at 12:30 p.m. on September 21st at the City Hall, located at 202 C Street in downtown San Diego. The marchers will stop at the Santa Fe train station to highlight transportation alternatives and end up at the County Administration's Waterfront Park. There, local leaders will speak on developing sustainable policies and supporting green jobs and clean energy. Confirmed speakers include Todd Gloria, San Diego City Council President, and Richard Barrera with the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Councils. The organizers indicate there will also be music and fun activities. The coalition of over 25 environmental, health, and labor organizations endorsing the march includes San Diego 350, the Environmental Health Coalition, Sierra Club San Diego, the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, AFL-CIO, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 569, Citizens Climate Lobby, and California Nurses Association. Participants are asked to sign up at the group's website at peoplesclimatesd.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Lane Sharman, who is with the San Diego Energy District Foundation. We have a real David and Goliath story for you today. Lane, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It's a real pleasure, and we're all very excited and feeling very courageous right now because during the last 6 months, Californians from all parts of the state have been opposing a bill that was proposed by Assemblymember Stephen Bradford, and that bill would have effectively killed community choice energy programs in the state of California.
Yeah, they were calling it the Monopoly Protection Bill, I understand, and basically it would have said that groups like the San Diego Energy Foundation would have had a very difficult, if not impossible, time to form an energy district that would give consumers an alternative to buying power from SDG&E. For example, your district, I understand, wants to give consumers the choice to buy power from locally produced green energy sources, such as solar on rooftops, instead of gas-fired power plants and everything else that SDG&E wants to build.
Let's just be really clear about the bill. The bill was originally drafted for the specific purpose to make it impossible to start a community choice program like we have in Marin and Sonoma by effectively saying there will be no members on day one. So obviously it would not get off the ground. It was a law that was designed with a specific intent by the investor-owned utilities. And that was misrepresented before the assembly on the floor on multiple occasions.
Wow.
And it caused lots of Democrats, including Assemblymember Tony Atkins, to vote for this law in its original form.
Because they didn't really understand
what it did. They did not understand the law. They did not really investigate the law. They did not talk to their constituents. And so effectively, the entire work that has been done by hundreds, if not thousands of San Diegans, including Supervisor Diane Jacob, including Dave Roberts, including Marty Emerald, and many other leaders in the San Diego County would have all gone down the drain had the bill passed under its current format.
So listeners, so you understand how this works with a community choice program such as the one that Marin County has. If a county or a city, let's say County of San Diego, decided that they want to create a community choice program with San Diego Energy Foundation, for example, the way that it has worked in the past is the city or county would simply send a notice to all the ratepayers and say, you're now a customer of the new community choice program here. And if you don't like it, you can opt out. And if you really want to go back to SDG&E or PG&E, you can do that.
That's correct.
And I believe it's 80% would
That's correct.
Stayed in, right?
Yeah, 80%, not 85% have stayed in with Sonoma, which is the most recent community choice program to launch in the state of California. And it's launching with effectively a slightly lower rate and much significantly 50% more original clean energy being sourced inside of the county of Sonoma. So that's an incredible success story. And it really is incumbent upon business and labor, and I say labor very emphatically, to begin to work together to effectively show that they have the intelligence and the character to start a community energy program to create choice and competition in the county of San Diego so that we can actually have a affordable and reliable energy future. Right now, the rates in San Diego County, particularly in the area of what is called the coincident and non-coincident demand charge, is driving businesses out of business in the county of San Diego.
And what this bill would have done in its original form is it would have said that if a city or county wanted to start a community choice program, you couldn't just automatically put people in. You'd have to notify them you were starting the program, and they'd have to actually make them sign up for it, which would have presumably resulted in a much, much lower number, not enough to be viable.
No, it's a proven fact that people are not going to opt into something that they don't know about. So if the city investigated or the county investigates in any part of the United States, a CCA, the laws are always written so that it is an opt-out program.
Right. So initially you had the Sierra Club and the big guns in the environmental movement up there lobbying heavily against the spill. And their initial victory, so to speak, was only a partial one. They managed to get that language taken out of it, and then the Sierra Club turned around and dropped its opposition. But there was a coalition. Tell us the name of it.
Yes, so the coalition is called Californians for Energy Choice. And Californians for Energy Choice really is the same group of people who helped to defeat Proposition 16, which was a PG&E-sponsored bill to basically kill community energy in 2010. And so 2014, we have PG&E added again. They've basically come in and helped to write this bill.
Without the opt-in clause, there were still problems with it.
And so they find out that with this coalition, this provision does get successfully removed from the bill during a Senate negotiation. And part of the deal of removing this provision was to also add another provision, which was completely arbitrary. It was called the three-county provision. But in exchange for removing the opt-in provision, the Sierra Club and other organizations removed their opposition.
Now, you have counties in Northern California that have more than three counties opted into one of these, I understand. And so they basically were trying to make this...
Watering down a CCA agency. A community choice program needs lots of members. And there are lots of counties in this northern part of California that have 5, 10, 15, 20,000 citizens. And you can't get a community energy program off the ground with that few.
No, for example, I could see in our area there could be something out here in East County where you could have the city of El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Santee banding together, but you wouldn't be able to do that if this bill had gone through.
No, you would have been able to have done that, Miriam. What you would not have been able to do is you would not have been able to get more than three counties to get together. Such. And so this was called the three-county provision. And there was also lots of other provisions in the bill. But the poison pill, or the nuclear option, if you like, was taken out. And the quid pro quo was that if we remove this option, this element of the bill, you, the Sierra Club, and other organizations will withhold your opposition to the bill.
Wow.
That left only the organization, Californians for Energy Choice, to stand up to Goliath. And what we did was we all banded together, we passed the hat, we hired a wonderful individual environmental lawyer, lobbyist rather, and this lobbyist worked for us tirelessly. We contacted every single senator in the California Senate and explained to them that this bill was a bad bill. It was a mean-spirited bill. It was designed to kill community energy in the state of California, and nobody should vote for this bill. And what happened, Miriam, which is so wonderful,
amazing,
is the legislative session came to an end without a single senator sponsoring the bill. It never even got to the floor for a vote. It was dead on arrival.
And that is amazing, because we all know that SDG&E and other utilities pump hundreds of thousands of dollars into the coffers of campaigns for some of these senators. So that's quite an amazing victory. And you guys also lobbied the public as well. You were out
there
getting the grassroots going and social media and so forth. And I know our publication had things in it, letting people know what was going on so they could write their senators. And they understood this wasn't in a vacuum, that if they made this vote, people were going to know what they had done.
And so, Miriam, what's happened today is that we now have thousands more Californians who actually understand community energy programs. They understand what the process is. They understand what the benefits are. They understand who the opposition is. And when you have the investor-owned monopolies and utilities ganging up against you like they did, obviously you're on to something good. So the good is in San Diego today, we now have lots of people who want to get this off the ground. We need to get it off the ground. It's good for Republicans. It's good for Democrats. It's good for labor. It's good for environmentalists. It's good for activists.
Businesses.
And ultimately, it will be good for San Diego Gas and Electric, because San Diego Gas and Electric will finally have a full energy partner on which it can bounce ideas, in which it can improve its network, in which it can lower its costs, so that we can have more San Diegans staying in San Diego and operating their business without the fear of not having any competitive forces operating to make San Diego a more affordable, reliable, and environmentally responsible area for electricity.
Okay, so the next steps for you moving forward, I understand that you're in the process of seeking out an advisory board to get this started. Tell us about that.
Right. So the San Diego Energy District Foundation is a foundation. It's not an energy district. It's not an agency. It's a 501c3. We would like to see all of the leaders from labor and business coalesce, come together in a roundtable, in an advisory board, and begin the process of solving three fundamental problems. One is the inertia of getting a CCA off the ground in San Diego is quite strong, because there are a lot of questions that have been put forward about, well, is this CCA going to be good or bad or not, what have you? And labor, by PG&E's efforts, has been persuaded that somehow a CCA is not a good thing. Well, it is going to be a good thing, because CCAs love labor. They love the prevailing wage provisions that you see in project labor agreements. CCAs engage in developing projects with PLAs, and so labor has nothing to fear about a CCA getting off the ground in San Diego. Number two, we have to engage San Diego Gas and Electric to reform its business practices and reform its rates so that San Diego Gas and Electric demand charges and other infrastructure charges become affordable. And number three, we have to engage the innovators, both in the United States and worldwide, in energy storage so that we do not plan, implement, and build any more gas plants in the region. Right now, we have a multi-billion dollar gas plant planned to replace San Onofre.
And they also want to put one at Quail Brush plant at Mission Trails.
Yes, the Quail Brush plant is close to being dead, but Pio Pico is alive and well, yep, and is about to be constructed unless a 24-hour appeal is successful.
Right. Now, I have a question for you. In East County, there's a lot of people who get upset with SDG&E for several reasons. One is the high rates. Two, the fact that they caused some of the wildfires.
Of course.
You know, another issue with them has been some of the negative impacts of a couple of the large so-called renewable projects out here, particularly these wind projects and now even some industrial solar that people are concerned are going to drain the aquifers. The eco-substation also.
And I totally understand that. And I think that we have to have environmental responsibility in all fronts. And environmental responsibility means that we have lots of options in front of us. For example, when you drive by a Qualcomm Stadium, you've got to ask yourself, why are there not any solar trees in the parking lot? We have some of the best solar companies in the state of California, and we can't get that done.
Maybe we can cover San Onofre with solar panels.
We have lots of in-basin opportunity. We have a lot of innovation in the energy storage field. So I feel that the environmental claims that have been put forward and that you're discussing, Miriam, are justified. We don't want to effectively rape our backcountry in the name of renewable energy because we have not exhausted our opportunity for in-basin generation. If you look at all of the building stock in San Diego County, you've got to ask yourself why less than 1% of the commercial buildings have solar on the rooftop. Well, the reason is because the terrace structures are designed to disincentivize solar on commercial rooftops with the demand charge. The reason we don't have solar on the rooftops in commercial buildings in San Diego is because there is a tariff called the demand charge, which disincentivizes the use of solar. And let me explain to you what the demand charge is, because it's very important that readers, or that listeners rather, and readers, of course, who have a home but not a commercial building, understand what is a demand charge. A demand charge is as if you rented a car from San Diego to Los Angeles and you drove that car 70 miles an hour on the freeway one time. They will charge you a multiplier times 70, that one time 70 charge, and they will call that your demand charge or your speeding charge. So there is a 15-minute interval that San Diego Gas and Electric looks for and all of the California investor-owned utilities look for. It is called your peak usage. And then they multiply your peak usage times, in San Diego, $35 in the summertime, which adds up to 50% of your bill in some cases.
Now, speaking of rates, you've mentioned that another project of yours is to be attempting to discuss rates with SDG&E and try to negotiate them to lower rates.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea that the San Diego community have a open and transparent discussion about rates, about business practices. So we need to have a open and transparent discussion in San Diego County about why our rates are so high and what we can do to reduce our rates. Now, having high rates, as we do in San Diego County, is going to, in some ways, be the necessity is the mother invention. It's going to create a lot of opportunity and a lot of demand for businesses and parks going off the grid. And I don't think that that is what San Diego Gas and Electric wants. We need to have affordable rates, and we need to figure out how all of us can work with San Diego Gas and Electric to have more affordable business rates, particularly business rates.
Yeah, they are the highest utility rates in the nation right now.
They are in the top five
right now. At
least
for electricity. Yeah.
In the domestic United States. They're a little bit higher in Hawaii. So that's number two. And then number three is we need to stimulate the innovation of energy storage. We need to practice the development of microgrids in San Diego County. We need to encourage all of the stakeholders, government, business, labor, to start developing the more resilient kind of energy models that the future demands. And by doing so, we're going to lessen our requirement for peaker plants throughout the region.
Right, the gas-fired peaker plants.
Yeah. So these gas-fired peaker plants are really the go-to answer for the utilities. And it's incumbent upon the innovators of San Diego to make them not the go-to answer.
Right. I mean, that's pumping greenhouse gases
exactly.
in the air, pollutants.
Right.
It's right. Definitely not clean energy.
Right. And I would like to, you know, encourage my friends at the Citizens Climate Lobby and 350.org and the Sierra Club, of which I'm a member, a dues-paying member, to continue to ask for a carbon dividend. That is to say, a fee on the extraction and burning of carbon, and that that money would be returned as a dividend to the people of the United States. And I would like to say that it might be a good idea to return it, a majority of it, to young people. They're the ones that are inheriting this intergenerational problem. They're the ones that are going to have to pay for it. They're the ones that are already strapped with college debt, which I think is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
My generation and my parents' generation, we need to start manning up, if I might use the phrase, to our moral obligations to the younger generation.
Well, very good. Well, Lane, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the show. Congratulations on your big victory up in Sacramento in defeating the monopoly protection bill that the utility companies wanted to go through. It's officially dead now, I understand. If people want to get more information or they want to get involved with the San Diego Energy District and helping to create a community choice program for people to buy clean energy produced right here in San Diego from, as you've mentioned, in-basin sources, not destructive big energy projects anywhere, how do they get more information?
Well, thank you, Miriam. It has been really lovely being here with you again, and I enjoy it so much getting a chance to see you. To get to know how to be involved, the best place to go is to the San Diego Energy District website. That would be www.sdenergydistrict.org. And then be sure to call me directly. My number is 858-755-2868. I would love to hear from your listeners, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you again.
Well, thank you so much. Listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been talking with Lane Sharman with the San Diego Energy Foundation, and we thank you very much for taking the time on this big day for you to come out here and talk with us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Some new tools to battle wildfire. As we head into the fall, the county is renting another firefighting helicopter to go along with its other two choppers, as well as assets from CAL FIRE and the military. The county is also announcing the start of the Ready, Set, Go campaign to help people get prepared long before dangerous Santa Ana winds kick up.
At a press conference this week, County Fire Chief Tony Meacham gave tips on how people should prepare for wildfires.
The first part is ready, and that means do your 100-foot defensible space. You have to do the clearance around your home to give our firefighters an opportunity to get in and protect your home. clear the dead vegetation, the fuel, the trees 100 foot. Look at the roofing material on your home. Remove furniture, those types of things. The second is get set. Have a plan with your family. Know what medications you're going to take. Know what pictures, what important documents, where they're at in the house. I would advocate that when the Santa Ana winds blow, to pre-pack your car. Grab those items. And the third is when the public safety officials say go, you need to leave. Your home is not worth your life.
Supervisor Jacob talked about changes that the county has made to improve fire safety.
Since 2003, we've spent more than $285 million on fire protection improvements. That includes new equipment and other apparatus. It includes improving our response times in rural areas. And today, we have a better trained and more mobile firefighting force than ever.
Supervisor Bill Horn also spoke.
Most of the fires that occur in the outlying unincorporated area, especially my district and Diane's district, they can be handled quickly. We can hold them to 10 acres or less if we can get air support there rapidly and we have our choppers up.
We welcome the additional Blackhawk you see behind us here today. Will make us better in getting water on the fire sooner and hopefully keeping them from becoming major wildfires that we've seen in the past.
Firefighters say this could be a very dangerous fire season because of the ongoing drought. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
In the November election, voters will weigh an array of local ballot measures across San Diego County on a wide range of issues. In La Mesa and Encinitas, voters will be asked whether their cities should legalize and regulate medical marijuana dispensaries. La Mesa residents will also vote on whether to impose term limits for council members and the mayor, and whether to make the city clerk an appointed position instead of elected. Julian Cuimaca Fire District voters will be asked to approve a new benefit fee for emergency medical response and firefighting, since their district has opted to remain independent from the county fire authority. In Escondido, residents will vote on whether the city should become a charter city. National City wants its voters to increase sales tax by a penny for 20 years to fund police, firefighting, graffiti removal, senior and youth services, road repairs, and more. Chula Vista voters will cast ballots on whether to require competitive bidding on major contracts. Another Chula Vista initiative would end runoff elections to fill council vacancies if one candidate gets over 50% of the votes in the special election. In the Rincon Ranch area, voters will weigh in on whether to approve a tax for road repairs. Across the county, voters are weighing in on school bonds in several school districts. Cajon Valley Union School District wants a $20 million bond to increase student access to computers and improve technology. Lakeside Union School District seeks $31 million to modernize classrooms, build science labs, and increase student access to computers. The Lemon Grove School District is asking voters for $10 million to fix or replace leaking roofs, modernize facilities, build more classrooms, and increase students' access to computers. Ramona Unified School District wants $40 million for modernizing classrooms and restrooms, fixing or replacing roofs, electrical, and plumbing systems. The Escondido Union School District wants a whopping $182 million in bonds for repair or replacement of classrooms, improving security, and upgrading technology. The National School District is seeking $26.1 million to rebuild its aging classrooms and facilities, meet access requirements for the disabled, and upgrade heating and air conditioning as well as technology. The smallest school bond measure countywide, $2 million, is in the Vallecito School District, which asks voters to support improvements to educational facilities, health, safety, and technology. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The American Civil Liberties Union in San Diego is asking the public to urge Governor Jerry Brown to sign Assembly Bill 1327, which passed the legislature with bipartisan support. The measure would require police to get a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance on you, your family, or others in your community. According to Norma Chavez Pedersen, the executive director of the ACLU in San Diego, AB 1327 is a huge victory for personal privacy that could set a precedent for the rest of the nation. She says law enforcement interests oppose AB 1327. However, 76% of Americans surveyed believe police should get a warrant before using drones against citizens. She adds, in California, we understand innovation. We also understand privacy and civil rights. California should lead, not lag, in protecting people's privacy from intrusion by drones. The ACLU is urging you to contact the governor. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. The American Civil Liberties Union in San Diego is asking the public to urge Governor Jerry Brown to sign Assembly Bill 1327, which passed the legislature with bipartisan support. The measure would require police to get a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance on you, your family, or others in your community. According to Norma Chavez-Peterson, the executive director of the ACLU in San Diego, AB 1327 is a huge victory for personal privacy that could set a precedent for the rest of the nation. She says law enforcement interests oppose AB 1327. However, 76% of Americans surveyed believe police should get a warrant before using drones against citizens. She adds, in California, we understand innovation. We also understand privacy and civil rights. California should lead, not lag, in protecting people's privacy from intrusion by drones. The ACLU is urging you to contact the governor. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
In light of the improved revenues and reduced losses at Lake Jennings, the majority of Helix Water District board members on Wednesday opted to keep the lake and its campground open for another year in hopes that it will become financially sustainable. Board members Kathleen Coates-Hedberg, Joel Scalziti, and Chuck Muse supported the extension, and that's a reversal of position for Muse, who previously wanted to close the lake. But two board members, Deanna Verbecki and John Linden, opposed keeping the campground open any longer and want staff to explore options and costs for shutting it down. Coates-Hedberg told East County Magazine that she views that suggestion as ludicrous. She adds, the staff will be bringing back a board report with these suggestions for a vote. When it gets on the agenda, then we need to get everyone there. But Linden takes a different view. We are in the water business, not in the camping or entertainment business, he said at the meeting. I'm strongly against water rates going up for something not water-related, he added. A special committee has been exploring options to save public access to Lake Jennings after some board members last year called for the lake to be closed and the campground decommissioned permanently. The lake is also a popular destination for hikers and picnickers, as well as fishermen and campers. Scalziti pushed for formation of the committee, and he has led the effort to save public access at the lake. He says the campground supports the fishing program and that if the campground were closed, revenues from fishing would also be negatively impacted. Losses for recreational activities, such as fishing at the lake, have dropped a whopping 88% in the last year since the committee was formed, though losses for running the campground fell just 30%. The improvements are due largely to increased revenues from fishing and camping after getting the word out to the public, as well as some cost-cutting measures. Overall, losses from operating the lake fell 56% from fiscal year 2013 to 2014. Three members of the public also spoke at the meeting, all in support of keeping the lake open. Bob Reed of La Mesa suggests that having the campground run by a camp host system could save enough money to make it financially sustainable. Two speakers say that they come to the lake regularly with children in a 4-H club, and they want it to remain accessible to the public in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A majority of Californians, 58%, believe that the United States should offer shelter to unaccompanied children from Central America who have crossed our border fleeing gang violence in their homelands. A new field poll found that 58% of Californians support sheltering and supporting these children while their long-term status is being determined. A new field poll has found. Only a third would support deportation, with others undecided. Most Californians, 55%, would also support President Obama issuing an executive order to implement policies to deal with the children if Congress fails to act. Voters were less supportive of Obama taking executive action to help 11 million undocumented immigrant workers already living in America if Congress fails to do so. Statewide, nearly half, 46%, would support such action, while 36% would oppose and 18% have no opinion. The field poll surveyed 1,280 registered voters in six languages and dialects. Support for sheltering and helping immigrant children was strongest, 70%, among Latinos, but also had support from the majority of white, non-Hispanic voters. The highest support came from Democrats. Nearly three-fourths of all Democrats polled, 72%, would offer help to these youngsters versus only 35% of Republicans who would support shelter for the children on even a temporary basis. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they seem hairy?
Time is running out for some California farmers who want to continue receiving federal assistance to improve soil, water, air, and habitat quality on their land. Since the Conservation Stewardship Program was launched 5 years ago, more than 60 million farm acres nationwide have been enrolled in the program through the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Sophia Krushevsky with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says the CSP is unique in that it isn't about helping farmers avoid environmental harm, but rather about enhancing and improving what conservation-minded farmers are already doing.
So maybe they started doing a little cover cropping, but they really want to get more into a full suite of resource-conserving crop rotations. Maybe they've done some improvements in the way that they're managing their livestock, but they want to start looking at rotational grazing.
The CSP, which was created in the 2008 Farm Bill, has been reauthorized and strengthened with the latest version. The roughly 20,000 farmers with five-year contracts up for renewal must do so by September 12th through the nearest NRCS office. Krushevsky calls the program a win-win for the environment and for farmers, and says the CSP represents a new forward-thinking vision of American agriculture.
We're really seeing a strong focus on the need to support farmers not only have productive, viable farms and ranches, but also be able to work those farms with an eye towards natural resource conservation.
Krushevsky says new farmers interested in the program can submit an application to enroll at any time, with NRCS collecting and ranking the applications once per year, typically in February. For Public News Service, I'm Mona Shand.
U.S. Attorney Laura Duffy's office announces that charges have been filed against two suspected smugglers accused of abandoning a pregnant woman to die in the Otay Mountains over the Christmas holiday season. The suspects, Fernando Armenta Romero and Carlos Hernandez Palma, face up to 10 years in prison and up to $250,000 fine. At an arraignment last week, a judge moved to hold them without bail since they are considered a flight risk and a danger to the community. According to the complaint, the victim's husband called for help on December 29th to report that his wife, Jacqueline Capistrano Choa, had been suffering medical distress when he set out to seek help and left her in the care of the smugglers who had refused to aid the woman. Border Patrol agents conducted an extensive search of the rugged mountainous area for 2 days before finding her body. The medical examiner found that her death was caused by diabetes complications and also by hyperthermia from the cold winter weather. She was 11 to 12 weeks pregnant at the time of her death. According to court documents, the couple had made arrangements with smugglers in Mexico to bring them across the border for $12,000. The smugglers claimed the journey would take 2 days or less, that it would not be arduous, that the terrain was mostly flat, and that the most difficult part would be climbing over the border fence. The woman had developed diabetes after the birth of the couple's second child and was on diabetes medication. The couple also thought that she might be pregnant. Before leaving Tijuana, Mexico, for their journey into the United States, the smugglers took the woman for walks around the park to determine whether she was fit enough to make the trip, especially since she appeared overweight and tired. She repeatedly required rest stops. The smugglers argued about whether she could make the smuggling trek, but despite their misgivings, they decided to take the chance, all for money. Despite the smugglers' description of the terrain as mostly flat, the hike was actually mountainous, covered with large boulders, and it was difficult to traverse after climbing over the border fence. After about 2 days, Ms. Capistran began to slow down and needed frequent rest stops. She told her husband that she felt like there was water in her lungs and she was having a hard time breathing. Soon she was unable to walk at all. Her husband repeatedly pleaded with the smugglers to seek help and to use their cellular phone, but they refused, claiming it didn't work. After the third day, the woman became unresponsive. Since the smugglers refused to seek help, her husband left his wife with the smugglers and hiked into the wilderness on his own. With the help of a good Samaritan, he finally was able to contact Border Patrol for assistance. Unfortunately, by the time the Border Patrol agents and Capistrano's husband found her in the Otay Mountains, she was dead, abandoned along a trail. The smugglers had hiked out of the mountains 2 days before. One of the suspects called his brother to pick them up, making no effort to assist the stricken woman. A hearing on their case is slated for this week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report on East County Magazine. The San Diego State University campus police have issued an alert warning students that a sexual assault occurred early Saturday morning at 1:39 a.m. at the Granada apartment complex on Hardy Avenue. A stranger reportedly followed the victim, a student at SDSU, to her apartment and tried to befriend her, then followed her into her bedroom and assaulted her. The suspect fled when the victim's roommate arrived. The suspect is described as either a tanned white male or possibly Hispanic in his early 20s. He is 5'8" to 5'10" tall with an average build, chocolate brown hair, a short haircut, and brown eyes. He wore a baggy shirt with a gray center and multicolored sleeves. Anyone with information or questions should contact the SDSU Police Department at 619-594-1991 or call Detective Cruz at 619-594-1987. You can remain anonymous by contacting Crime Stoppers at 619-235-8477. You can provide information by sending an email to police@mail.sdsu.edu. The San Diego State Police Department is investigating the incident and offers the following safety precautions. Be aware of your surroundings. Avoid dimly lit locations. Avoid alcohol consumption to the point of impairment. And immediately report suspicious activities to the police department.
A wildfire burning in Yosemite National Park has forced closure of some of the park's most popular trails. Strong winds have whipped the fire into a 700-acre conflagration that on Sunday forced evacuation of over 100 hikers and climbers, including 40 on the trail to Half Dome, some airlifted out by helicopter. The blaze is believed to have been sparked by the Meadows Fire, which began back on July 20th with a lightning strike in a remote wilderness region. The Los Angeles Times reports that the Park Service initially let the fire burn to restore the region's natural fire patterns, since it was at a very high elevation at first that did not threaten public safety. But now that winds have pushed flames into lower-lying forests, fire crews from the U.S. Forest Service, CAL FIRE, and other agencies are working to fully suppress the firestorm. So far, the fire has not closed any roads, but trails in Little Yosemite Valley and Half Dome are closed, as well as trails at Merced Lake and Sunrise High Sierra Camps, Clouds Rest, and Echo Valley. Currently, 7 helicopters, 3 air tankers, 1 air attack, 6 hotshot crews, and other resources are assigned to the fire, according to the Yosemite National Park's fire blog website. Visitors should be sure to call the fire information line before heading into the park. That phone number is area code 209-372-0327. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Cuyamaca Community College invites students and the public to join in a memorial ceremony honoring those who lost lives in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in New York and Washington, D.C. that claimed over 3,000 lives. State Senator Joel Anderson will participate in this year's ceremony. Senator Anderson says that the terrorists who took innocent lives wanted us to give up. But instead, he observes, we stood up and showed them we were stronger than ever, and we would grow from one of the saddest moments that our nation has ever faced. In addition to remembering those lost, including first responders who risked their lives to save others, Anderson says, we need to make sure the next generation learns this part of our history so that they continue to honor the lives that were lost. The annual ceremony will take place on Thursday, September 11th at 10:30 a.m. The location of the ceremony is the Grand Lawn at Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego community of El Cajon. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
I'm John Mattis, investigative guy, host of Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
John Mattis has won 7 Emmy Awards, a Golden Mike, and the Edward R. Murrow Award for exposing fraud and corruption. Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers is produced by the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena, guest hosting Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers on the East County Magazine radio show. San Diego Gas and Electric Company is warning customers about a wire fraud that has been targeting SDG&E residential and business customers. Reports indicate that individuals are misrepresenting themselves as utility employees by calling customers and threatening to turn off electric and gas service if an immediate payment is not made. Customers are instructed to purchase a prepaid credit or debit card and to call another phone number where information is then obtained from the card and the cash value is stolen. SDG&E wants to prevent customers from becoming victims of this scheme. SDG&E does not call to ask for credit card information on the phone. Never give your credit card information to any caller. Only provide credit information if you place the call and know who it is that you're calling. If you received a phone call that is suspicious, and if you do have an outstanding balance to resolve, hang up and then call SDG&E at 1-800-411-7343.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.